Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to get into a conversation that I think we've been having on a number of occasions on this particular platform, and that is, the state of venture capital, in South Africa and across the African continent. And for today, we're going to be talking to a team that is looking to have their impact and extend their impact on the continent. So for today, I am joined by Bongani Sithole, who is the CEO of what we've come to know as Founders Factory. And I do believe that there's a repositioning that we're going to be talking to them about for today, and then we're just going to be getting into what does the strategy look like from there. So Bongani, greetings to you today.
Great, Mudiwa, thank you so much. It's a lovely afternoon here in Joburg, and good to be here.
Now, you heard me saying at the beginning, obviously, this is your news, to share that it's no longer going to be referred to, as Founders Factory. Maybe you could give us a little bit of insight. What's the new name? I think my big question is, for you guys as a team, what's in the name? Because we always ask what's in the name, but for you guys, what's in the name?
No, thanks for that question, Mudiwa. So I think first and foremost, my strong point of view is that a company name in some shape or form has to live, to represent its customers. It has to represent the market that they operate in, and of course it has to serve the purpose of what it exists to do. And we have been called Founders Factory Africa, investing into startups majorly in the southern region. We have been focusing on Kenya, South Africa, and Nigeria. And this rebrand marks an evolution to our model, and we aim to reflect our Pan-African ambition to collaborate in approach to helping entrepreneurs across the 54 states. So as a result, today we are rebranding from Founders Factory Africa into 54 Collective. And that means we are representing, or would like to have, a representation and a support to entrepreneurs across the 54 states of Africa. So today we are a Pan-African company, and we wanted a name that reflects the same, that also speaks to the collective nature of how we can build this continent together.
All right. Now, with the change, of course, as you said, you're trying to extend your presence beyond the countries that you've been focusing on now. You said it's primarily been South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria. What's the model that you guys are going to be taking? Because just the three countries that you've just spoken about now, that's already three out of four of the major tech startup hubs on the continent. So do we have do we continue with the hub approach and then filter out into the other regions, or are you looking to establish some type of a presence in each country, so that it's truly the 54, like you said? How are you moving forward on that front?
Yes, good question on that front. I think if you look at the VC model over the last 10 years, to your point, I think there have been four countries in, for the most part, that has been a representation of recipients of global capital, as it were, from, on the VC side. That has been South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, and Egypt. And subsequently, it means that markets that are closer to those countries in some shape or form are starting to emerge, right? We've started to see quite a lot of participation from the Francophone market, sort of central north, Tunisia as an example. You know, we're starting to see, you know, participation of these in Cameroon and the likes. So for us, what it means in this evolution in becoming a Pan-African company, it's really to essentially say that we are going to have offices, or in fact, we have offices in the four major regions extending into Egypt. And the way we are structured, we have a team of about 70 people. And that team is actually called the Venture Success Platform. The goal for that Venture Success Platform is to become a distributed team of expertise who understand the local nuances to be able to work closely with local entrepreneurs. In simple terms, what that means is, today as I speak to you, I live in Joburg, a Pan-African company. I understand Nigeria, but I'm not a Nigerian. Similarly, I'm not a Kenyan. So as a result, the best way to help entrepreneurs to go through the build process and removing barriers, the only way is to build and support entrepreneurs with local expertise. So we have built this team of essentially work with and support entrepreneurs on the local region. Subsequently, if we're in Egypt, we'll be able to touch Morocco, we'll be able to touch Tunisia, Niger, et cetera, right? So that's how we are structured. So access to 54 countries means that the four regions that we are in will enable us to touch the neighboring countries based on our presence in those local markets.
All right, cool. I think that the strategy does make sense from that point of view, having sort of like a hub and spoke approach, you know, to how you then go out into the various markets and, you know, keep your ear to the ground, you know, around what's happening there. One of the key things that we then wanted to find out, because we are a, you know, a business platform, right, is to say, as, you know, Founders Factory Africa up to this point, right, I guess we're looking sort of doing like a backward looking before we look, we do the forward looking with the 54 Collective, is to say, so far, how big has been your fund, you know, and the investment effort? How much has been deployed, you know, that type of thing?
So as Founders Factory Africa started 2018, we had three investors. There were two corporates and one family office, and we invested into three sectors. It was health tech, fintech, and agritech, respectively. Yeah. And we've raised a total of $32 million. Through those three investors, and we have invested.
This is dollars?
Businesses. Yeah, $32 million. Yeah. And we have invested into 57 businesses through that capital. Our model, really, when we started, was more of an accelerator structure, right? But we've built two capabilities. One was a team of expertise to essentially work and support entrepreneurs. And we used to charge for those services. And the second part was equity that we were deploying, or rather capital that we were deploying for equity. So that was the model, right? So the learning side of those model and the investment structure was really more of an accelerator backed by a team of expertise and capital deployment for equity. So in our first vehicle, we were not really a fund. We were an operating company, operating as an accelerator.
Mm. And then after that?
So a departure from that and the learnings that we have had through the first model, we have then transitioned into 54 Collective, as we discussed. And our goal and mission is very simple, is to make sure that we help entrepreneurs to build without barrier, and we want to redefine investment in the continent. What that means is that we wanted to find a way in which we can be able to deploy catalytic capital towards entrepreneurs, because we've learned a lot over the last 4 years in terms of what it makes a good investment across Africa. So the departure point from Founders Fund to Africa to 54 Collective is really five things, right, which I'll summarize quite quickly. One is that we have moved from an accelerator model to becoming a VC firm, focusing from from concept up to pre-series A. And we have evolved our technical expertise which we used to charge for to now a team of 70 Venture Success Platform members who are providing a value-add support to startups for free. Number three is that we have been mostly corporate-backed. And in order for us to raise diversified type of capital, we needed to open up our investment LPs quite wide. So we have departed a little bit away from a corporate debt model to open it up to family offices, foundations, DFIs, so that we can be able to raise more capital. And number four is we were in three sectors, as I've mentioned, EdTech, FinTech, and Health. Now we are agnostic, so which means that we can be able to see more investment across the continent. And last but not least, we are looking to launch in Egypt, and that will lead us to becoming a fully Pan-African company. So those are the five things that under 54 Collective, we now are embodying as a commitment to the 54 states of this continent to build and support entrepreneurs to build without boundaries.
And when it comes to, I guess, you mentioned earlier on that you had been able to raise $32 million up to this point. Does the departure into 54 Collective continue to, you know, pull on the $32 million, or has there been additional capital that's been raised, you know, in the interim?
Great. A good question. So with, as I said, we have extended an invitation to additional investors because of all the learnings that I've shared. So with that in mind, the fund that we have today is a $40 million fund, and we are continuing to fundraise on that $40 million fund. And our Venture Success Platform is powered by MasterCard Foundation, and we've raised $107 million US dollars with them. So combined, if you look at 54 Collective, is really a Venture Success Platform that is powered by 107 million US dollars, which we've raised, and continuing to raise a 40 million fund. Now, your question of the previous 32 million, the three investors that we had in our first fund, they continued to back us in this new fund. So they also came through into this new fund. So that is the departure from Founders Factory Africa into the new fund that we have started. So they continued to fund us, of course, with additional LPs that we are bringing on board.
All right. Yeah, no, because I do know that when we're talking about, some of the funds that are out there, if I think about probably one of the biggest funders in the world, which is SoftBank, they'll have like a Vision Fund 1, and then there'll be a Vision Fund 2, and they'll sort of ring fence those amounts, and you know, that'll be like a pool, and it will have its investments, and then you have maybe your second fund, and it has its pool, and you know, its set of investments. So I was also just trying to understand if that is a similar, you know, type of structure that you guys have, where the original three investors and their 32 million, you know, and the investments into the, I think you said 57 companies so far, you know, that stays there. And then now as 54 Collective, you've got 107, and then, you know, you are now, you know, making either additional but fresh investments based on this fund, you know, on its own. Am I understanding that part correctly?
100%. So if you look at, let's technically call it Fund 1 through Founders Factory Africa, it's 57 investments, three investors, and that's ring-fenced and closed. Mm. And then we started the new fund. We were lucky enough that the investors who were part of our first operating company, they have also subsequently supported us on this new fund. So the new fund today has got its own investments, new structure altogether, again, backed by these new institutions that I've mentioned. And we've got new deal terms that are different to Founders Factory Africa, which I'll speak about shortly. But yes, you are right. It's two different funds, and equally they are being treated separately.
All right. Now, Wangani, one of the things that I was curious to find out from you, it's a conversation that we've had time and time again on this platform, and it's about the risk appetite that funders have when it comes to capital allocation, both in South Africa and on the continent. In South Africa specifically, there's just this feeling that what's considered to be venture capital is more private equity, in what's actually happening on the ground. And if you scratch under the surface a little bit, you then understand that, well, part of the risk appetite comes from, you know, who is backing a fund. And if you have, you know, corporate or institutional investors who tend to be a bit more risk averse, then you then have, some of that filtering, you know, into the funds themselves. So maybe you could just talk to us, around, that particular aspect, because it does feel like sometimes there's a disconnect in the market where you've got people that have got businesses that want, I guess, there's a difference. There's a lot of people looking for funding to get a business off the ground. But my observation is that a lot of funding is for businesses that are already off the ground, have found market fit, and that are looking to scale. So maybe you could just talk to us about some of those dynamics.
Yeah, so maybe let me start with your opening remarks there. Generally, there is a sense that VC is still quite early and as such quite risky, and it is indeed a risky asset class. But the returns as well that we have seen globally, it has proven that definitely VC can return capital to investors. I think the challenges of the nascency of the market more broadly, including South Africa, is the fact that VC is really maybe 10 years old, slightly more, right? And a typical fund, you have about 10 years to invest and, nurture those investments to an exit. In some instances, it's 10 years plus two. So now when you look at it overall, a new market like ours in Africa, it still needs time to essentially prove out the returns that are needed by investors to increase that appetite and trust of the VC space. The second point is the type of businesses and entrepreneurs that you're speaking of. I think there's two spectrums that I want to speak of. It's a founder who's coming in with just an idea and needs to be supported in building a tech-enabled businesses or business coming into a VC. And then there's a business that is already on the market that pre-seed, seed, or maybe almost at Series A that need funding. What we have done quite well as 54 Collective and historically Founders Factory Africa, we have managed to essentially combine the two things that we think a nascent market needs, which is a strong technical expertise that work with entrepreneurs along their journey of building a business to de-risk them at each stage. And the goal of doing that is we've realized to some of your points of these ventures not necessarily having capital or follow-on investors struggling to provide them with capital. What we've realized is that if you are helping these businesses to get to product market fit and you reduce the failure quite earlier on, you are enabling later stage VCs to essentially be able to back these businesses because they know that they have been de-risked. So it's a question of who's helping early stage businesses to succeed and be de-risked, to open it up to later stage investors who have capital to back businesses that are great. What we have seen even during funding winter, so to speak, we have seen capital dry up in the last 2 years, but continuously we saw like articles saying another business got like 5 million, another business got 20 million. And you ask yourself why. And the reason for that is because great businesses, even in a downturn, they always float to the top. So what we want to try and strive for is to help those businesses de-risk them, and they should have good fundamentals so that we can reduce the failure points for later stage investors to essentially put in capital to these businesses. And that's how we see a way in which we can build a market to build trust between funders and, of course, startups that are or should be fundable.
Funny enough, as you were talking, it reminded me because I do cover a lot of capital raises. And even in this downturn over the last 2 years, at least in publicly, some of the big ones we've seen, Planet 42, Naked Insurance, Pineapple Insurance, there's been a lot of money, Yoko and others that, you know, have been able to attract, you know, a lot of money, you know, in that. But I'm also then curious to understand, because the other fact around the risk, at least in the last couple of years, has been, you know, the cost of capital, right? Capital is currently very expensive. And there is, you know, right now there's an expectation that we're going to see interest rates starting to turn. Lots of debates about the fact that we should have already been on a cutting trajectory by now. Do you think, at least because South Africa has always had that risk-averse attitude, but globally, and I ask globally because a lot of money that's coming into African startups is coming from international backers, who have tended to be to have a greater risk appetite. But we saw that risk appetite paring down a little bit over the last couple of years because interest rates were high. And now you were seeing even global investors looking. Global investors almost seemed to come and match where South African, you know, risk appetite was sitting. Back in the day, they were very high, but they sort of scaled back, you know, to say, hey, we're now looking for returns, lots of pressures on startups to be profitable, all of this stuff. Do you expect that the interest rates turning is going to maybe bring back, you know, some of that risk appetite from international capital? Or do you think that the market has sort of sobered up a little bit and said, actually, we've learned our lessons? You know, even if capital is going to be a bit cheaper, we are likely going to be a little bit more conservative with how we deploy capital.
Yeah. So I guess maybe, Mudio, that's a nice segue to one of the key things that I wanted to share in terms of our treatment of capital and how we work. And I'll get to answering your question. So one of the things that we intentionally changed moving into 54 Collective is to providing catalytic capital. And what that means is a combination of equity and non-dilutive capital, right? So it means that as a founder, when you come to us, you get two types of capital. One is equity that is dilutive in nature. So we give you up to $250,000 in exchange of equity. And then we also provide non-dilutive capital of up to $250,000. And that is actually charged at 5% and lower, right? And as you probably know, you'll never find a loan anywhere in Africa that is 5% or lower, right? So that's what we are doing for our own startups, because we have learned quite a lot. Over and above that, we are very intentional about supporting women and youth across the continent. So to that end, women-led businesses, we provide them with an additional 150K of non-dilutive capital, right? So we are very intentional in that structure of providing that diversified capital, or call it catalytic capital, because we have learned in our first 4 years of operation that South African startups, and broadly African startups, they don't have enough capital in the beginning because they don't have value. So you can't raise at a higher valuation. So it becomes so expensive for them to test out their business model. And hence the reason why you see lots of failures. So we wanted to be very catalytic in how we can help entrepreneurs. And that's why we give them a combination of loans that are very low. And then we also give them equity to extend their runway. Right. And that's why we are so catalytic. Now, with all of that, going back to your question, two things. One is the type of capital that we raise. It's more of a VC-led capital, and it doesn't necessarily look at a country-specific interest rates per se. It's a typical 2 and 20 model that basically says, I'm going to give you X amount of money and you're going to take 2% management fee to run your fund. And then you're going to make investments. And then after 10 years, sometimes plus two, which is 12 years, you have to return my money, right? So that's the structure that we have. So it's a Pan-African fund. It goes beyond the local interest rates. Having said that, most of the businesses, of course, they operate in local currencies, even though they're getting dollarized capital. And that can hurt a business in many ways. So what we try and do is to find ways to help these businesses to at least operate in more than one market, to hedge against volatility of currency and things like that, so that at the end of the day, when you look at your business and evaluate it, you're not just looking at one currency denomination. And hence the reason why us being Pan-African company to help these businesses to operate in more than one country.
All right. I think that gives us a sense of what's happening in the market and the way that you guys are structuring it. But maybe I'm wrong, Mongani, but I think you said that there were three different sets of capital that you're offering. And I think I heard you speaking about two. You said the first one was the 250, then the second one is where you then add the 150. What's the final one?
Yeah, so the three types of capital, and maybe to reshare again. As a founder, you get the up to 250 US dollars of fund capital, which we take equity for. And then the second is you get up to 250,000 US dollars. That's the second one of a loan. And then depending on whether a business is male or female led, if it's female led, we then top it up with 150 US dollars. The reason for that is we are very intentional in our fund to make sure that we increase women participation. If you can look at VC globally, it's less than 10% of women that are being funded. And for us, we want to be very intentional. In fact, the total number of our portfolio to date, we're sitting at least 45% of women-led businesses because of our intentionality. And of course, the ticket sizes that I've mentioned, they depend on the stage. So the total ticket size would be up to 500 all combined. And then depending on the stage where the business is at, will of course fund differently, but the maximum will be 500 all combined.
Okay. That definitely, I think that gives us a full view of what's going on. Wangani, as we are, coming to land this conversation, one of the reasons why I even brought up this point is because a few weeks ago, the Southern African Venture Capital and Private Equity Association, SAVCA, brought out a report, and specifically for South Africa, they mentioned the fact that VC investment crossed 3 billion for the first time in 2023, and as much and that is progress, and I think we need to celebrate it as much as possible. But I kept getting a lot of feedback from founders around the piece that we wrote around that, to say, hey, great to see that there's a lot of interest in investment, but where are these things? Where are these things happening? Where do we go? Like, how do we find these people that are willing to write these checks? So maybe you could just give us some insight. You've obviously given us some of the criteria that you're looking for and how you're structuring the different types of checks that you're writing, whether it's equity, whether it's debt financing, whether it's being intentional about addressing specific groups. But outside of that, and I think the other thing you mentioned earlier on is that you used to be bound to three particular sectors. Now you're more open. But outside of those things, like, how can in 2024 a founder get their business to a, I'm just going to call it to a fundable, stage where if they present to someone like you, you have no choice but to say, yes, I'm willing to write this check.
That's a good point, Mudio, and I'm going to answer it in two ways. The first is taking us back to 2017, 2018, when we started back then as Founders Factory Africa. One of the things that we contended against was, do we raise a later stage fund to invest into later stage businesses? And we found that a continent of 1.2 billion people didn't have enough fundable and de-risked startups, right? And the next question that we asked ourselves is, like, who's going to take the risk of helping early stage entrepreneurs to build quickly, to be de-risked, and to be fundable, so that you can increase the pool of fundable businesses in the continent? And upon that, we then decided to raise capital that was specifically focused on early stage, meaning right from concept up to pre-series A. And the second thing that we wanted to do, or rather we asked ourselves what needs to be done in order for that to be true, was capital alone at early stage is not enough. You need to build a team that's going to work side by side with these entrepreneurs to help de-risk their businesses. Right. So to that end, if you look at the number of deals today in comparison to the last 5 years, you will see that a lot more capital was going to South Africa, Nigeria, and Kenya. And of recent, you will see that all of these bubbles that are starting to be in par when you include Egypt and other emerging markets like Francophone. That tells a story. And the story is, the capital that's coming into the continent, one, we are starting to see more early stage VCs participating earlier on. Two, we're seeing more early stage entrepreneurs being supported, right, by VCs, which historically it wasn't the case. So it's a question of time and a question of intentionality from early stage VCs like ourselves, to essentially help these businesses not only to be fundable, but also be de-risked, right? So that they can essentially create sustainable commercial businesses with impact behind them. And that's what we are here for. So the goal for us is to make sure that the questions that the founders are asking you, 54 Collective is a place for those entrepreneurs to come, whether you've got an idea, you've got a pre-seed business, come and build with us regardless of the market that you are in Africa, so that we can de-risk you and help you to get a subsequent capital from other investors that we're working with.
And that's certainly, you know, something that, you know, will certainly direct people towards, because I do think it's, you know, quite a key question that's being asked out there. And, you know, and it also points to some of the difficulty that founders are having, you know, in the market. But as we round up on a final point then, Wangani, one of the big things when it comes to venture capital on the continent as a whole, and you've alluded to this a couple of times through today's conversation, is the fact that, you know, there's quite a bit of interest that is coming from, you know, global players. And, you know, there's a lot of international capital that is funding startups on the continent. What will it take for pools of capital to purely, maybe not purely, but to come majority from the African continent itself? I do know that in certain regions of the world, it's a policy situation where they say, you know what, we are not going to allow for, you know, investment of, let's say, banking. The one I can point to is India. I know that in India, venture capital is largely internationally backed because, from a policy point of view, the government says that they don't want, you know, the deposits of private individuals, of their citizens, to go into such risky assets or risky investments. But do you sort of see the same attitude on the continent, you know, where corporates or institutional investors will continue to see VC as something that is risky, you know, on the continent? What do you think will make us turn that particular tide where, you know, you reduce reliance on international capital and, you know, people such as yourselves as 54 Collective can raise your funding purely from, you know, African sources?
A good question, and I will tell you a bit of a story of what we've been doing over the last couple of months, right? So there are two things that are quite critical if you think about VC as an asset class. One is, if I'm not mistaken, the number might have gone up, but Africa holistically, we have over $140 based millionaires, and I believe over 20 billionaires in the continent holistically. And the third pool of capital is corporates, right, in Africa. And the question is, why are we not using the capital that, you know, these three segments of people have? And what we have come to find is, if you start with individuals, for the most part, some of them are second time generation wealth, right? So they are still contending around technology and VC as an asset class in comparison to the first generation that might have created this wealth through property, through land, through other means, right? So it's an education that's needed from us as venture capital to educate the market around venture capital as an asset class and really prove it out in terms of how it works and how it returns capital. The second is corporates, right? We have seen across Africa that there is a little bit of appetite, and capital can flow from Africa for Africans, from African corporates. But again, the same applies where it's more educational around the value that VC can deliver from a returns perspective to corporates. The second thing, as far as that is concerned, is if you look at the last 3 years of COVID, most corporates today, they have resorted back to the core and reinvesting that capital to the core, as opposed to diversifying that capital. Last but not least, there are certain areas or certain corporates where they can see that the future of technology is disrupting their base business model. So as a result, they're starting to look at technology as a way in which they can start to diversify the future of their business model. And as a result, those type of corporates are the ones that are investing capital into VCs as a way to buy innovation forward and as a way to test what a future could look like leveraging startups and leveraging technology, right? So these are the pool of things that we are starting to see on the market. The only thing, it comes back to what I said earlier, I think it's a question of time. Time is to corporate is going to be disruption. Two is learning how much we as VCs are educating the market about the asset class. I would say the last thing is how many startups that are becoming successful where founders are exiting and taking their money and plowing it back into the VC space to then create a cyclical approach, right? If we can start to see second time founders coming back into the platform, putting their money where their mouth is, that will start to bring in a lot more people in Africa who have capital to essentially plow capital into the African market. And I think that will help quite a lot because to your point earlier, capital will be less cheaper because it's revolving within the continent as opposed to outside money.
And on that point, that's where we end off today's fascinating and informative discussion just around the state of VC on the African continent, talking to the team from 54 Collective, previously known as Founders Factory Africa, giving us some insight into their journey, from being an accelerator and now being a fully fledged venture capital fund, some insight into the state of funding on the continent. Why? What are the sources of capital? How do those sources feed into the risk appetite, the types of businesses that are going to be invested in, the geographies of where businesses are going to be at, and some of the other considerations such as access to market. Also just interesting, just hearing some of the considerations that a person like Bongani makes in the market, which businesses to invest in. They started off just investing in three particular areas. Health tech and fintech were two of these areas, but now they've opened up. It's more broad than that, as well as broadening the way they are raising that particular capital, getting into their strategy. That has to do with being in the four major startup hubs on the continent, and then that will then give them a foot through which they can then enter all the rest of the market so that they have a presence or at least access to the 54 countries of the African continent. And there's some regions that he was mentioning to say that they are coming up. They are the areas that we have typically known as being the startup hubs: South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, and Egypt. But he also points to the rise in activity, from places like the Francophone countries, and that they expect that there's going to be some growth from that point of view. Also, making us understand some of the efforts that are being made to to support businesses at earlier stages, so that we don't have this market that is skewed to only supporting businesses that are in a growth phase that have already done most of the legwork. And Bongani talking about how intentional that they are in making sure that they increase representation and make sure that they're writing decent enough checks, but also giving the guidance that's necessary to help businesses to get to the next stage that they need to get to. So that's been it. We've been in conversation. That was us with Bongani Sithole. He is the CEO of the 54 Collective. Bongani, thank you so much for being with us today.
Great, Nodiwa. Thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.